And welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis. And with us today, we have Tina Pagato. She is the CEO of Bethesda Project here in Philadelphia. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Let's start off with that quick elevator speech. Give us the mission of Bethesda Project.
Sure. Bethesda Project is a nonprofit social services organization founded in 1979. With a mission to find and care for the abandoned poor and to be family with those who have none.
Who do you serve? Where are you located?
Our sites are all located in Center City, Philadelphia. We have 14 different sites and programs offering a continuum of services, everything from emergency shelter to permanent housing, all with supportive services to help people really achieve their highest level of self-sufficiency. We specifically focus on working with people experiencing chronic homelessness. That means that they've been on the streets for long periods of time. It is a special HUD definition, which means they've been on the streets for a year or longer, or they've had multiple episodes of homelessness within the past 3 years that adds up to 365 days. Along with the time on the street, there is an accompanying disability. So that could be severe and persistent mental illness, substance abuse, or a chronic medical condition.
Let's talk a little bit about Center City. So you got started in 1979, and that was before the boom and the economic upswing of the Center City area. The difference is, what's today? What are you seeing when you look at Center City now?
Well, interestingly enough, we were founded by a group of volunteers out in Paoli. And that group came in because they saw homelessness in the city as a challenge and a problem that they really wanted to make an impact. And they focused on women who at the time were called bag ladies. It's not a term that we would use today, but these were women who were chronically homeless and literally carried all of their belongings in plastic bags. That was the group that this volunteer group started focusing on. And over time, they had a model that was really working to care for these women, which was essentially helping them to care for basic needs, teaching them skills that they had lost while they were living on the streets, connecting them with services that they needed, and really providing that sense of family for them. They realized they had a model that was actually working and decided to formally incorporate as a 501c3. By the time they started developing the different sites and programs that we have, they started to see that there was a need for single adult men. There were programs that were serving women and families, but single adult men were sort of relegated to the margins and there weren't programming available for them. And we started developing a series of permanent supportive housing programs to serve that population. Today, when you look at the population on the street, you see about a 70% male, 30% female mix. And the services that we provide actually reflect those numbers as well.
Is the reason for homelessness and living on the street different today than it was in 1970?
Yeah, 40 years ago.
Thank you for the math.
Sure.
I mean, is it different? I mean, today when you see someone on the street, they're younger too.
Yeah, the population has changed. Back in 1979, early 80s, you were seeing a lot of the effects of closing down state hospitals that were serving people with severe and persistent mental illness. There was also the crack cocaine epidemic that was really hitting the streets and causing a lot of people to become addicted. I think now we're seeing, you know, we have to keep in mind that Philadelphia has the highest poverty rate among the 10 largest cities. And I think poverty is certainly a main contributing factor. But mental illness, untreated mental illness, is certainly still a cause, as well as the opioid crisis that we're really faced with here in Philadelphia is certainly contributing to the cause of homelessness here.
Are we having more homeless than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
It's interesting. There is a point in time count that occurs every January. And the 2018 point in time count reported 5,788 people. Of that number, 1,083 were unsheltered. That number has slightly increased over the past 4 years. in seeing trends where there is an increase in people who are unsheltered. The 2019 numbers haven't yet been released, but I expect we'll see that number about the same or a slight increase over time.
Let's really quickly define shelter and unsheltered, homeless, et cetera. When you're defining someone who's on the street during the daytime, what do these terms mean?
Sure. Sometimes people think that once someone is in shelter, that they're no longer homeless. But the reality is someone experiencing a housing crisis is homeless. And while they are receiving emergency shelter services, they're still homeless. They have not yet been housed. So that's where the definition sort of gets fine-tuned. But then there are people who are unsheltered. These are people who are still actively on the streets. They don't have a place to sleep at night. They might be sleeping in abandoned buildings or places not meant for human habitation. That's the unsheltered definition.
And who is out there on the streets right now? Who's out there looking for these people and working with them? You are, obviously.
Great question. The city of Philadelphia actually has a really good system in place. The city has an Office of Homeless Services that really has outstanding leadership, and they have been able to coordinate a continuum of care here in Philadelphia that includes government-supported organizations as well as privately supported nonprofits, and together work to really set up a system that can address the problem. I think the challenge comes about that there's just not enough affordable housing for people. And even once people are in the system, getting the services that they need, and they're getting emergency shelter or maybe getting connected to transitional housing, there aren't enough permanent housing options that are affordable for people so that they can progress through the system fast enough.
It seems like almost everything is directed towards getting them off the street as fast as possible for the night. And then 7 o'clock rolls around, and then what happens?
Yeah, well, that's a challenge for sure. There are shelters that are open 24/7, so people do have a place to stay. But there are shelters that close just because of space constraints or other programming that's occurring in that space. And then people really have to find a place to go. And that, I think, contributes to people seeing homelessness and having concerns that it's growing because there's just not daytime spaces for people to go and get their needs met or just to be safe and secure during the day.
When you get up and it's 7 o'clock in the morning, what is happening during the day? Describe what you're doing.
At Bethesda Project, I can describe for you what our shelter program looks like. We have emergency shelters, some of which are housed in church partners. So they're allowing us to use that space overnight to provide emergency shelter for this very vulnerable population. And then during the day, they are seeking out places where they can be to get case management needs met and other services. One of those places is the large shelter that we operate in conjunction with the City of Philadelphia. It's called Our Brother's Place. It's a 149-bed shelter for men experiencing homelessness. And during the day, there are 3 meals a day that are served, but there's also programming. We have engagement specialists there who are really working to develop individualized housing plans for people that focus on the steps that are needed to get into viable housing options. That could mean getting a birth certificate or identification, connecting them with medical care, all of the things that people need to work on while they're trying to secure a viable housing option for themselves.
But so many of these that are suffering the chronic homelessness do have an underlying condition that's keeping them from pursuing these. When you talk about mental illness that's being untreated, you've got addiction issues, alcoholism. We forget alcohol anymore. We talk about opioids so much. But how do you approach all of this?
Bethesda Project really uses a housing first approach, which is very different from a housing ready approach. And it focuses on the belief that people have a universal right to be housed. And then once they are in a stable living environment, you can work to address other issues like their medical conditions, mental health symptoms, substance abuse. And it sort of flips the notion on its head that people have to prove that they're deserving of housing. And instead, we work to remove the chaos of the streets, because once you're on the street, you're really in a survival mode. And you're not able to make decisions that someone in a stable living condition can really make. So once they're in, we work to address those issues, some of which will naturally start to resolve themselves. But we have low barriers to access the housing so that the process can be streamlined and move people as quickly as possible from an unhoused state to a housed condition.
Describe the difference between housing first and housing ready. You kind of alluded to it.
Sure.
But even I know that this is kind of unique to get somebody into a place right away.
Housing ready is more of kind of having people prove to you that they are ready to be housed. So it might be something like you have to be clean and sober. You have to have a job. You have to be connected to psychiatric care and taking medications. Those types of requirements are actually very difficult for someone to achieve while they're still living on the streets. And housing first is almost the opposite of that. It's saying you don't have to prove that you're worthy or that you've earned the right to be housed. We're going to get you in a stable housing environment, and then we can help you address the issues that have either contributed to your homelessness or have become symptomatic while you're on the streets.
So it's the difference between it's not transitional housing to get you towards that goal. It's getting you in that house and then transitioning you into a job and to care, et cetera.
Yes, if someone is able to achieve those goals, yes.
Boy, I didn't even think about that. I'm assuming that everyone is able to become clean and sober or receive psychiatric help or get a job or be able to learn a trade at a certain age. And I just opened another can of worms. Age in all of this.
At Bethesda Project, we're working specifically with adults age 18 and older. We do not have family services.
But older adults.
Yes, we do have our population, approximately 30%, last time I checked the statistics, approximately 30% are age 60 or older. And we're actually seeing a real challenge in finding appropriate services for people as they age. A lot of our permanent housing sites, we don't have elevators, we have stairs. And it can become increasingly difficult for people to, thrive in an environment as they're aging without additional supports. We do everything we can to keep people housed with us as long as possible. So that might mean partnering with Philadelphia's Corporation for Aging to come in and provide personal assistance care to someone, or having them attend a day program. Or we're working with them on looking at options once their needs increase to get them into senior housing that's affordable for them, or sometimes assisted living if their physical needs are just greater than we can tend to.
And if you're just joining us, this is Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis. With us today, we have the CEO of Bethesda Project, Tina Pagato. If you'd like more information, BethesdaProject.org. That's BethesdaProject.org. You can find them all through social media. On Facebook, they are Bethesda Project. Instagram, Bethesda_Project, and Bethesda_Proj for Twitter. And again, let's get back into this. So how do they reach out, or how do you contact with them? How is first contact made?
We have a series of entry-level programs that include some outreach and engagement. You asked me previously, and I realized I didn't actually respond fully to your question, the way that the city's system works with outreach. So I want to talk about that, and then I'll share with you Bethesda Project's version of outreach and engagement. The city of Philadelphia has a coordinated outreach system that includes teams that travel around. They're identifiable with outreach jackets on. They will go out and talk to people that are on the street. There is an outreach hotline that people can call if they see someone struggling. And when you call and identify someone, a team will be dispatched to come out and actually engage that person and start to assess them for needed services. That's a system that has been in place for many, many years. And I think the outreach teams do a great job of knowing where people are on the streets and working over time to slowly engage them. Because that system is so thorough and in place, Bethesda Project doesn't duplicate efforts. So we don't have a van that drives around to do our own form of outreach. But the way that we do outreach and engagement is by sending case managers to places where people experiencing homelessness naturally gather. It could be a meal served at a local church on a Saturday, or a tea time that's sponsored by a women's group, places where people are naturally coming in, places where they feel safe. We will have a case manager come and be part of that group and over time develop relationships with people and start to transition the conversation to talking about where they're sleeping at night, the types of services that they might be looking for. And then we start to share options that we have that could meet their needs. It's very relationship-based. And that's what makes Bethesda Project unique in our approach, is that we really focus on building trusting relationships with people so that they can begin to open up about the situation they're in and accept the help that we can offer. But we realize that there's not a one-size-fits-all. And I think that that is a misconception out there, that if someone's homeless, there's a one size fits all. You reach out to them, send them to the shelter, and they will automatically go from homeless to housed. But I think that for the average person, we've all had experiences in our life where we needed to change something. I think an easy thing to think about is maybe exercise or changing your diet. And you can have people telling you that you really should do it, and they can offer you all types of reasons why. But until you're ready to make that change, and until you find the right formula that's going to work for you, people aren't necessarily ready to go from point A to point B. So we spend a lot of time building relationships, getting to know personal choice, and then finding that right fit that's going to result in a successful change for someone, and recognizing that the right housing option for you might not be the same fit or someone else.
Is the housing individual, or are there group homes? Actually, describe your footprint. What do you have?
At Bethesda, so I've talked a little bit about our entry level and our emergency shelter programs, but our permanent housing programs, which was how we first got started, we have, they appear to the outside to look like typical apartment buildings. So each resident will have their own unit. But part of our model in being family with people is providing community spaces. So there will be congregate kitchen space and living spaces where people can come together and rebuild relationships and spend time in community. And in those spaces, that's where we will oftentimes host volunteers. So I mentioned that we were founded by volunteers and then over time professionalized and incorporated as a formal nonprofit. But we've never lost that commitment to the importance of volunteerism. Volunteers spend a great deal of time helping us in achieving that family feel in those community spaces. On an annual basis, we will host over 5,000 volunteers, and they're doing 11,000 hours of service on an annual basis.
That's amazing.
It really is incredible. Mm-hmm. They're providing all sorts of support to us, whether it's service projects like cooking and cleaning that actually helps us achieve our mission, or if they're helping us to celebrate milestones or create that sense of tradition and family that really helps people heal from the trauma that they've experienced in their life. They can do things like celebrate holidays with us, or come and just play bingo, or come to our annual family picnic and help to, you know, create a festive and fun environment. They really are essential in helping us achieve our mission.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But once someone is part of the Bethesda Project family, what is the process to get them into that continuum of care, to get them into a stable future?
At our emergency shelter, they'll be assigned to a case manager who's helping to create that housing plan and determining what that path is going to be to get from an emergency situation into a housed and stable situation.
You're a willing participant, and you are a participant that's putting into this as well.
Yes, actually, the way that we describe it is that the guest or resident is the person who has the plan for where they want to go. And the case manager is the person who has the map, and they're going to sit in that co-pilot seat and help them get where they're headed. And that happens in a lot of different ways. It could be through, you know, researching options for them. It could be advocating for them as they're working through the process. It might literally be accompanying them to appointments and connecting them to resources, or just asking really good questions to help someone define for themselves what they are seeking as their next steps. Once someone's in our permanent housing sites, the case manager functions in much the same way, but they're looking at specific goals and helping them determine what those goals are. They're in areas of income and sustainability, residential stability, so keeping them stably housed. And then there's also a section about greater self-determination. So that could be anything that will help you feel more fulfilled in life or connected as part of the community. And while they create the care plan, the case manager's asking really good questions to help someone figure out what those goals and outcomes should be for themselves.
So obviously you're working with job training, programming, drug and alcohol organizations, et cetera.
Yes, partnerships are essential. Whether it is financial partnership or a service partnership or a partnership in the community to provide opportunities for volunteerism. We rely heavily on partnerships. Some of them are formal, some of them are informal, but we really have recognized that I think to be successful, you need to figure out what it is that you're specifically good at and then partner with others who are experts in those areas rather than everybody duplicating efforts and someone being, you know, a jack of all trades and a master of none.
You said you were not in this to duplicate services.
Correct.
So what are you looking for from the community, from the public at large? Are you looking for businesses to offer those opportunities, organizations to offer volunteer hours to your residents? Are you looking for housing? You're looking for in-kind?
Yes.
I just say playing that out.
Yes, there are so many different ways that people can help. The first, and I would be remiss to not mention that financial contributions are essential to our success. We are really good at what we do, but the only way we can continue to provide these excellent services that support not only the people we serve, but our community at large is to have financial support, whether that's, you know, from individuals, corporations, foundations, all of it matters to us. And there are lots of ways that you can contribute on our website. There is a great page about ways that you can get involved to support us financially. But volunteerism is equally important. I've talked about how important it is to fulfilling our mission, but volunteers do perform a lot of services for us that otherwise we would have to spend money on, and that staff time would have to be spent doing. And they also provide in-kind support that is essential. The needs are great for this population in terms of we have an endless need for socks and underwear. We have an ongoing need for all kinds of toiletries. And on our website, you can find a list of most needed items in those categories and how to get them to us. It's a great way for people to get involved if they're not able to come and volunteer in person. This is a way that they can put a bin up in their place of employment that gives some visibility to Bethesda Project, but also lets people feel like they can contribute to finding solutions and helping to address a need that people see in the community.
And this does affect all of us. The quality of Center City life, travel and tourism, all of this is affected by the homeless.
Absolutely. Right now in Philadelphia, it's a really exciting time. We're seeing a great deal of cross-sector collaboration where different partners are coming together to say, hey, this affects my business. This affects my area. And we want to be part of a solution and not just point fingers at the problem. And I think that that is a really exciting place for Philadelphia to be in terms of bringing people with means together to partner with organizations like Bethesda Project, like the city's Office of Homeless Services, in order to come together and find a solution that will benefit all parties, including the people experiencing homelessness.
We've had such a boom in everything, in Center City, employment, housing, et cetera, et cetera. It seems, and yet we've got this large population that has been forgotten in all of that.
Yeah, it's really true. There is a push, though, I think that people recognize that a measure of a thriving city is not just development and booming business, but it's also how people are being cared for at the margins. And to ensure that as we are growing and thriving in our commerce, in our business development, in our high-end housing developments, that we're not forgetting the people who are experiencing homelessness, and that as we're growing, we're not forgetting to take care of the people who are really left behind. And I think that there is a continued effort across the city to ensure that we're taking care of everyone as we are moving forward and prospering.
We are out of time. You've got some events coming up. You want to give us a real quickie on that before we say goodbye?
Absolutely. May 4th is our single biggest volunteer opportunity. We are a partner for Comcast Cares Day. It's a national event, and all types of volunteer projects are happening around the city. We are aiming to have over 100 volunteers help to complete lots of different projects at our single biggest shelter, which is our Brother's Place. You can find information on our website to sign up and participate in this large day of volunteer service.
And then there's a fun one, too.
Yes, we have our biggest fundraiser coming up. Each year, we rely on this fundraiser to help support our general operations. It is on May 8th. It is our party and auction. It's our 22nd year hosting this fun event. It's at Citizens Bank Park in the Diamond Club. The Fanatic comes. It's an auction. We have special guests coming, excellent food and drink, and it is a party with a purpose to really support our efforts to end homelessness.
And, of course, we'll find that at your website as well.
Yes, tickets are available now.
So two great events coming up, and you can find information, of course, about everything that we talked about today at BethesdaProject.org. You'll find information about how to volunteer if you're a business or an individual. Also information about the events coming up. My guest today has been the CEO of Bethesda Project, Tina Pagato. And Tina, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.